Hello everyone, welcome to Advanced Studio Classroom, your window on the world. My name is Campbell. It's great to have you with us. Today we are studying day two of our newsworthy clips, and we have a touching article, an interesting article about a doctor in Seattle who is working to save kids' lives. Now, once again, we have Albert and Pauline here to discuss this article with us. Hi, guys.
Hey, great to be here again.
Yeah, it's good to be back.
All right, so yesterday we talked about Beverly Hills and their new driverless vehicle fleet. Now, today we're going to be doing a shift, and we're going to be talking about, well, a doctor. And what is so special about this doctor, Pauline?
Well, actually, going along with yesterday, we're talking about some new advances. Mm-hmm. In this case, instead of in technology, we're talking about in medicine. Mm-hmm. And it actually saved a young girl's life, it looks like. So I think this will be a really touching article.
That's right. Okay, so let's get into it. Our article is on page 23 of our magazine. So if you have your magazine or your mobile device, please join us, and we will start at the top of the page.
Game changer. Seattle Doc's research is saving kids like Katie with rare cancer. When doctors at Seattle Children's Hospital wanted to try an experimental treatment to attack preschooler Katie Bell's rare and dangerous cancer, her parents were willing but wary. The Seattle girl was diagnosed at 3.5 with high-risk neuroblastoma, a nerve cell disease that triggers tumors in babies and young children, and leads to death in more than half within 5 years. Katie's chances of survival were even lower, just 35%. Uncharted waters. Dr. Julie R. Park, the pediatric oncologist treating Katie, thought the girl was a prime candidate for a new but unproven therapy, using two transplants of a patient's own stem cells, not just one, to wipe out the deadly cancer cells. Two transplants meant even more chemotherapy, high doses of toxic drugs with brutal short and long-term side effects. But if it worked, the double dose could save Katie and other kids like her, Park said. Turns out she was right.
All right, so the title of today's newsworthy clip is Game Changer. Seattle Doc's research is saving kids like Katie with rare cancer. What are we talking about when something is a game changer?
I really like this phrase. So it doesn't have to do with games or sports. It can, but it doesn't have to. Mm-hmm. Although it does kind of refer back to that. So if you're in the middle of a game, if something's going on, and then say, maybe if you're watching a soccer game and then the goalie gets hurt and is taken out of the game, and from that point on, the team is able to score, the other team scores again and again and again, right, because they don't have their key goalkeeper. Mm-hmm. That moment was a game changer. It changed mm-hmm. everything from then on for that game. But in general, we use this phrase when anything happens that really changes something and makes a remarkable shift in how things are done.
Right.
So in this case, we're talking about a cancer research that really has changed the lives of some people.
Mm-hmm. And we're talking about a Seattle doctor. So DOC, D-O-C, is a short mm-hmm. form. It's kind of more of slangy, you know, a form of the word doctor. And this doctor's research is saving kids like Katie with rare cancer. Now, who is Katie?
Well, Katie is this little girl, and at 3.5 years old, she was diagnosed with this nerve cell disease that triggers tumors.
Wow.
And it's even more grim than that. People within 5 years of having that, half of them they don't live.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just think how heartbreaking for that family, right? When they get this diagnosis, their little three-year-old girl has, not only does she have a serious disease, but then they hear these really scary statistics saying that, you know, most kids who have this don't live even another 5 years, so she might not even get to be 10 years old. You know, to have that as a family, to hear that kind of news must have been really, really hard.
Yeah, and it says her chances of survival were really low, 35%. And neuroblastoma is a rare and dangerous cancer. And so the doctors at Seattle Children's Hospital, they wanted to try an experimental treatment to help her. Now, an experimental treatment means that, you know, there hasn't been a lot of research done yet, you know, and she would probably be one of the first people to receive this treatment. And no one was really sure the results, right? So her parents were willing but wary, and that makes sense.
Right, understandable. Wary just means a little concerned or a little uncertain, but still they decided to go ahead and try it.
Right. So as we said, this was an experimental treatment, so that's why this next section says it was uncharted waters. What are we referring to?
Uncharted waters?
Mm-hmm.
I imagine it full of sharks. No, uncharted waters are what we use when we want to say something that hasn't been explored and there's unknowns involved, right?
Right.
So it's like something that we have not charted or mapped out that we don't know of.
Right. So you're kind of entering into an unknown area. Right.
So with your normal prescription drugs, or when a doctor prescribes you a surgery or something like that, they have a pretty strong idea of what the results should be, or they'll give you your various possibilities and say you have this much of a percentage chance of this happening. It's all kind of mapped out, so you really understand what risks you're taking, what the potential benefits and risks are. But in this case, it's uncharted water. You don't have that map of, you know, possibilities and statistics and looking back to say, okay, we think this is what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. Of course, they have reasons for choosing this particular experimental treatment. They don't just jump straight into testing humans, I'm sure. But still, there's a lot more unknowns involved.
Right. So they didn't know what would happen, right? So this was kind of a new treatment, right? And so we find out the name of the doctor is Dr. Julie R. Park, and she is a pediatric oncologist. All right. So first, what is this adjective pediatric? Well, she's a pediatrician, right?
So that means this is a doctor who treats children.
Yes. Okay. And an oncologist, Albert?
An oncologist is a doctor that treats cancer, so that's their specialty in their field.
Okay, so she is a doctor for children focusing on cancer.
Mm.
Okay, and that's basically what a pediatric oncologist is. So Dr. Julie R. Park is a pediatric oncologist, and she was in charge of treating Katie, and she thought the girl was a prime candidate. What does that mean?
Prime candidate means your ideal or the best option.
Suited for this.
Yeah, she was well suited for this new unproven therapy that they had.
It's kind of ironic because the reason she was a prime candidate is because she had this really rare and dangerous cancer. Right,
right. And doctors gave her a chance of survival at 35%.
Right. Yeah, so she was a really good candidate because, you know, most likely if she didn't get this treatment, she would probably pass within the next 3 to 5 years, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, she had the cancer, so why not? Let's try, you know? And like Pauline said, I'm sure they did their research. They weren't just haphazardly like, let's try this treatment on her, right? It was a new therapy, but it was unproven, meaning that not enough research was done, not enough trials were done.
Right, and she was going to be a part of the trials that could eventually prove the success of this therapy, but you know, you have to do some trials first. Somebody has to be willing to take part in these unproven therapies.
Mm-hmm. So she, her parents were willing, but they were a little wary, but they did allow for Dr. Park to use this therapy. And what did this therapy involve?
Well, it involves the transplant, not one, but two of the patient's own stem cells.
Mm-hmm.
Now, stem cells are cells that are like what we call origin cells almost. Mm-hmm. It has the word stem in it. Just imagine a tree where everything starts from there. stem cells are able to change into any other cells.
Right.
So this way they can help people heal if people are lacking a certain type of cell to heal themselves or to grow something in particular.
Mm-hmm. Right. So stem cells, as Albert was saying, these are cells that aren't in any shape or form, you know, and they can become anything, right? So your hand cells are different than your eye cells and things like that.
They're like a blank canvas. Mm-hmm. You know, babies have a lot of this. Young children have a lot of the stem cells as well.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes it's extracted from young humans or other animals and used to help with recovery.
Right. So they use two transplants of the patient's own stem cells, not just one, to wipe out the deadly cancer cells, right? Now, the problem was that two transplants meant what?
It meant even more chemotherapy. And you might be familiar with this term, chemotherapy. It is one of the common therapies for dealing with cancer, but it's highly toxic. It can just, it has a lot of really negative side effects on people's health. And from everything I've understood of it, it just seems like a really difficult process to go through.
Yeah. And it's hard enough for adults to take chemotherapy. Now, we're talking about a very young child. She was in preschool, right? So 3.5, 4 years old, really, really young. And so not just one dosage of chemotherapy, she had to take a lot more doses of chemotherapy.
Right, and you mentioned that it's really tough for people in general. It's because basically, as of right now, we don't know how to deal with cancer effectively. So we're basically feeding poison to people with cancer, and the poison is indiscriminate. You know, it's not able to know the difference between bad cells or good cells, and it just attacks both the good ones and the bad ones in a person's body, and so they're left really weak. You know, their bodies are being destroyed even further.
Mm-hmm. But why was the doctor willing to do this?
Well, it says if it worked, which of course is a big if, but mm-hmm. if it did work, the double dose could save Katie.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, this is an extreme situation, right, where extreme treatments and methods seem to be warranted because they knew there was such a high chance that she would die otherwise.
Right. Well, turns out she was right. So the therapy worked,
Woo-hoo.
Which is good. So the risk paid off, right? So in essence, they kind of wiped out the cells. They kind of created a clean slate, gave her new stem cells, and they were hoping that it would eradicate the cancer, and it turns out she was right. All right, so what happened with Katie after her therapy? Let's find out.
Pushing results forward. 6 years after her second transplant, Katie is an active third grader with no signs of disease. And the protocol developed by Park and her colleagues in the Children's Oncology Group has been adopted as the new standard of care for kids with neuroblastoma across North America. Work on the double transplant protocol was years in the making, Park said. Research dates to the 1990s, when scientists first found that stem cell transplants improved survival better than chemotherapy alone against neuroblastoma and other cancers. The next step. Park is turning attention now to research that focuses not only on keeping kids alive, but reducing the toll of treatment. The regime we give for high-risk neuroblastoma is the most aggressive and toxic that we give children with cancer, or anybody with cancer, she said. The next step is to develop newer, less toxic therapies.
So we're pushing the results forward. That means we're trying to make more progress. So how is Katie doing?
Well, it says 6 years later after that second transplant, remember we heard she got two transplants, which was the unusual part of this therapy she received. Instead of just getting one, she got two. But 6 years after that, she is now in third grade. She's active and has no signs of the disease. So
that's
pretty
great.
Amazing, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. I mean, on page 23, there's two photos of her, and I really wish that our audience, our listeners, can see it. Mm-hmm. They can if they pick up the magazine.
That's right, yes. So basically, her cancer is what we call in remission, which
Ooh.
Means that it is gone. And there are no signs of the disease. And this protocol developed by Park and her colleagues in the Children's Oncology Group has been adopted as the new standard of care for kids with neuroblastoma across North America.
So you remember when we were talking about this right before the reading, we were saying when Katie took this treatment, it was an experimental treatment. It was unproven. It was really kind of scary for the parents to try and decide whether or not they should do this experimental treatment that they couldn't know for sure how it was going to turn out. Well, now, thanks to their courage and Katie doing that, now it has become more proven. It's not considered experimental anymore. In fact, it is
the
new standard. Yeah, so this is the way to do it now.
Right.
Professionals are agreed.
And I just want to emphasize that even though this is the new standard or, you know, like the default choice to go with, it doesn't mean like it's proven or like guaranteed that people who go through this treatment will survive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, that's with any kind of treatment, right? Mm. You know, there's plenty of people who go through chemotherapy, but it doesn't really help.
Right.
But this is the standard, which just means that, you know, when people look at neuroblastoma, they think of this as the way to treat it, okay? And the protocol, we see the word protocol here. What are we referring to when we talk about protocol? It says the protocol developed by Park and her colleagues.
Right. I feel like protocol is just a set of standards or rules of how you approach or engage something.
Right.
Yeah, it's a method of doing something, and it's considered the best method. This is the way we do it.
Mm-hmm. So this protocol is now the new standard. But it didn't just happen, right? Like we said, she didn't just randomly think, well, I'm just going to give her two shots of this chemotherapy or two shots of it wasn't just, you know, fly by the seat of her pants, right?
Right.
So what do we find out about this research?
Right. As opposed to being, you know, by the seat of your pants, it was instead, we say, years in the making. So there was a lot of time that went in behind the scenes that built to this moment of finally being able to try it out on humans.
Exactly.
And in this case, on Katie.
Mm-hmm. So research dates back to when?
The 1990s. This is a while ago. Like, wow, almost 16
years. Before you were even born, Albert, right?
Hey, no. Ouch. Okay. Thank you very much that you feel like that I'm that young. I was born in 1985.
Wow, you're sharing your age on radio.
I know. But, yeah, so the 1990s, I remember it. Thank you. And scientists found that stem cell transplants improved survival better than just chemotherapy alone. So this kind of makes sense. You know, their doctors are giving patients something that's really poisonous and toxic, like we mentioned earlier. But to help the body recover, like a Band-Aid, they use stem cells to help the body just recover.
Right. Yeah. So it's pretty amazing what people have been able to accomplish in this area. So what's the next step? Are they just, well, this is good. We found a solution. Let's just stick with it.
Yeah. Well, the great thing is we're always trying to move forward in whether that's in technology or in medicine. Especially we'd hope in medicine we're always trying to find better ways to help people. And, you know, they're really aware. Park says, you know, they're turning their attention to this other aspect, which is the toll of the treatment. We talked about how difficult chemotherapy is, even for adults to go through, and they have to get, you know, this double blast of it when they do this new protocol of doing the double transplant, which that means going through a lot of really difficult physical duress during that time, even though eventually it saves their life. So, of course, it's worth it compared to the other option that's out there, but they'd like to find an even better way.
Right. So it says here that they're focusing not only on keeping kids alive, but reducing the toll of treatment, right? Because remember, chemotherapy has a lot of short and long-term side effects.
Right. And I wanted to focus on the word toll. I imagine when you're crossing a bridge or a freeway, when you're driving, you have to pay a little fee to cross it, to use it, right? But here, when you take a toll of something, it's exacerbating or exhausting you a little bit.
Yeah, right. I kind of, in a sense, it's again that imagery, right? It's taking something from you.
Yes.
Just like when you cross that road and they say, oh, if you want to go onto this part of the highway or whatever, you have to pay a little bit. They're going to take a little from you. Mm. But in this case, we're talking more about physical toll. It's they're taking something of your health with it when, in order to do this treatment.
Right. So they not only want to keep these children alive, they want to give them a good quality of life, right? I mean, you can be alive, but lying in bed all day and all the time and that wouldn't be very much of a life. So they want to not only be able to eradicate the cancer, but they want to do it in a less harmful way.
Yeah, and really, I was quite surprised when we read this last line about them saying this is the most aggressive and toxic cancer therapy they give not only to children, but to anybody with cancer. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's really extreme. I've heard many times just about the toll that, you know, cancer treatment takes on adults. We already said that. And so I knew it must be so difficult to see a child going through that. But then to hear that this is like the highest level of that that anybody receives, let alone a child, like, that's just really hard to hear, right? Mm-hmm. Obviously, anything's worth it to save a child's life, but you sure hope they can find something less difficult to endure.
I will have to say, I feel like children, sometimes we forget, they're more resilient than we give them credit for.
Yeah, it's true. You know, but, you know, with anybody with cancer, it's always hard to see them have to go through all that, you know, the toxins and the poisons that they have to endure.
But it is definitely an inspiring story of hope. Like we said, as difficult as it is, this girl gets to live, hopefully, a very long, happy, healthy life as a result. Whereas, you know, her future did not look that optimistic before. So that's exciting. And it reminds us that while this treatment may not be at the stage we'd want ideally for it, there, you know, just a few years back, they didn't think they had any answer for this cancer that was taking so many lives, and now there's an answer. So hopefully a few years more down the road, they'll have an even better answer, and that will keep finding better ways to care for those who are sick.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it is an amazing time to be alive with all the technologies that we have and all the different medicines that we have and just how things are constantly improving and getting better. You know, just with my own daughter, she was born very, very premature, so we got very familiar with the doctors and the hospitals, and I was constantly amazed at the amount of treatment that was available for her, you know. And I think just, you know, maybe 50 years ago, someone born the way my daughter was, they probably wouldn't have been able to survive.
Right.
You know, she was born at the cusp of viability, right? So it's just amazing what, you know, medicine is capable of nowadays.
Absolutely. And there's so many amazing people working in the medicine industry, right, who are caring for kids and people of all different ages who are hurting. I think there's just so many people who are doing amazing things, whether that's just in the hospital one-on-one with each family that's going through that, or on the research side of trying to push through and find more breakthroughs and game changers for families who are, you know, up against some difficult things.
Yeah, well, I don't know what you listeners might be going through in your life, but as we're talking, I just, you know, had this sense that, you know, some of you may be going through some difficult times with, you know, with cancer or with health or whatever. And if you are and you're listening to this, know that our thoughts are with you. If you would like us to pray for you, you can write to us, and we would love to pray for you and continue to, you know, support you. And remember, we at Studio Classroom are your friends for life, so we do want to be a part of your lives, and we do want to connect with you, so please do connect with us, you know. So this was a very, very interesting article about this cancer treatment, and, you know, I'm amazed at the courage of Katie and her parents and also Dr. Julie Park, you know, because if this therapy didn't work, that would kind of reflect badly on her in some ways. So You know, it's amazing what we can accomplish when we have a little bit of courage. With wisdom, of course, you know, we want to take risks, but with wisdom. All right, friends. Well, we hope that you enjoyed today's article. We have another day tomorrow, one more newsworthy clips. And tomorrow we're talking about one of my favorite things to do. We're talking about sleep. Very, very important. How can we get better sleep? All right. But before then, until then, make sure that you check out our QR code at the top of page 22. You can get some more information and some fun features regarding these articles. And as always, remember to keep in touch with us. And you can also visit our Studio Classroom mobile website at m.studioclassroom.com. All right, friends. Well, thanks for joining us today. We'll see you tomorrow. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.